This episode of Fluid Talks is brought to you by Fluidtech Global, your one-stop shop for custom solutions for businesses at any scale. Fluidtech provides a wide range of services from consultancy to enterprise-grade platform development. To find out more, click on the link in the description. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, or good night, wherever you may be. Welcome to yet another fantabulous episode of the Fluid Talks podcast with me, Michael.
And I, your host, Roger.
That. And I, Kuhusi. Okay.
Tony has just handed me something that he wants me to read. I don't want to read it, but the way he's done it means that I don't have a choice. So anyway, how are you guys doing?
Good.
Are your devices all on silent? Guy behind the video. So, guy behind the mic. Tony, are your devices on silent?
Who's Tony?
Okay. So, you wait. And you guys are good?
Yeah.
Sure?
Mm-hmm.
Alrighty. Why are there so many mosquitoes? Like why?
Climate change.
Okay, other than that.
Change climate.
I'm not going to get anything out of you this today, so it's fine. Anyway, you said you're good. Yeah, news. You have your news, yeah? You have your news?
Yeah, I have a news item.
Alrighty. In that case, then, let's go.
I keep asking, why does it sound so sad? Imagine if breaking news has such a harmonica sound. Breaking news.
Why are you hating?
The queen has died. Maybe that's appropriate, but then...
Why are you hating, Tony?
I'm just saying I'm not the biggest fan of that sound.
Such is life.
Si es la vie.
Excuse me. Yes, la vie. So who wants to go first to the news? Okay. TikTok will limit screen time for teens automatically. It's capped at 60 minutes. 60 minutes? But you can bypass that by entering a PIN or a password or something to extend to, I think it goes to up to 100, after which you are once again prompted to enter a password if you wish to extend, which seems it's like it's just one more step to continuing with your browsing. Oh, sorry, this applies to kids or to teens under the age of 18. So, yeah.
So it's still self-governing.
Yeah, self-governing, but they have also added some parental controls to in relation to this. So time limits, etc. I don't know how that will work. Is if anyone is listening who has a teenage child who is also on TikTok, please. Okay, guy behind the mic, you don't have a child.
A teenage child.
Okay.
That's nice. More power to you.
No, it's all good. It's all good. Actually it is possible for you to have a teenage child. Yeah.
A teenage child?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. But
no, it's possible.
Yeah,
it's possible.
I'm not denying it.
Yeah,
but why?
Why not? He was an active because boy.
A child having a child.
He was an active boy. I mean, it happens. A child. There are plenty of children who have children these days.
You just couldn't wait to populate the earth, eh?
Thank you for dismissing his.
I was gonna attack you, man.
But yes, that's it. TikTok. Time limit or screen time. Yeah, over to someone else.
All right, speaking of the media houses, YouTube, new head, Neil Mohan. If you don't know, Susan resigned a while back. So Susan was the ex-CEO of YouTube. But now part of his goal or YouTube's goal for 2023, it was like him addressing to the creator community. emphasizing that the company in this year ahead aims to continue supporting the community by giving them more tools to make more money. He also touched on other priorities, including YouTube is looking to experiment with generative AI and multiple formats like shorts and podcasts, among other things. So for podcasts, they're thinking of including it in YouTube Music, etc., etc. But basically, he was just saying, you know, he's looking forward to working with a lot of creators, not only in the US, but also outside, because, like, I think more than 50% of YouTube creators are outside the United States of America, or something, some statistic like that. So yeah, he's looking towards, you know, listening to more people. He also plans to increase the team size that handles creator-related inquiries, if I should call them that. Yeah, just to be able to, again, help creators make more money. And they're looking at tooling, such as, you know, being able to shop from YouTube, et cetera, like that, just to elevate that experience.
This all sounds like someone checking in and saying all the nice things that people want to hear. But, you know, when the going gets tough and when shareholders start demanding value, then boom, it's
not a good idea anymore.
Yeah, it's all of a sudden all these things are not.
One thing I can see happen is podcast. I mean, they have majority of the existing infrastructure ready.
I mean, true, but the thing is, if all you're focused on is the bottom line, then
what's the point of
then,
it?
YouTube Music is paid for, so you're just giving more value.
What I mean is, like, you see, currently there are, and you'll probably hear there are many cases where creators are, for whatever reason, someone might have a strike against the account, or someone is suddenly demonetized with no way to appeal, and the appeal is, you know, is handled by like a bot, and, you know, all of these are just to handle the bottom line, to take care of the bottom line, to ensure the bottom line is as fat as possible, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If that's all you care about, then all these nice things you're saying as you're checking in.
Hey, you can't hate. There's still a business.
Yeah,
and it's capitalism.
Yeah, no, it's just it's.
Hey, it's a coating on the cake.
I'd say it's like, well, we'll see what happens. Yeah, we'll see how it pans out. Because, I mean, I'm not really the biggest YouTube content consumer, but, you know, just from the outside looking in. Bleh.
Next time, speak from an informed position and see whether your opinion. I'm just curious whether your opinion will change.
Informed position in what way?
Like, as a quite a consumer of YouTube, or quite engaged in the YouTube community, and see if your stance will change.
I'm going to say I don't think it will.
No, which is fine. That's the question mark, isn't it?
I'm not a creator. I don't think I don't plan to be.
You're actually a creator.
You are a creator.
Well,
Whether you hate it or like it, you are a creator.
Okay, yes, I am. Yes, I am. But what I mean is, this is going to sound... No, I'm not going to continue with this train of thought. It's fine.
You
want to
get cancelled?
No, I'm not going to continue with this train of thought. I'm not going to continue with this train of thought. It's fine. Carry on. As we all were.
My news is all things TikTok. So the Canadian government have banned TikTok from all government-issued phones, mobile phones.
That was a thing?
Yeah. Yeah, they're citing security issues. So they're banning TikTok from all government-issued phones. Well, that's happening in Canada. Volkswagen. Volkswagen.
Imported from some country somewhere.
Volkswagen, Audi, and Porsche. They're getting their own in-app store, and it includes TikTok.
Okay.
So the apps that will be there, TikTok, of course, Spotify, The Weather Channel, and more coming.
Okay, say that. So Volkswagen is developing a store, or what, did I mishear that?
Yeah, they're developing an in-app store.
Why? What's the incentive?
I don't know.
In the cars? Why would I want to watch TikToks in my car?
Because humans
are stupid. That sounds
like
a safety hazard.
Because humans be stupid.
Like, people watching TikTok already have like crazy accidents. So why would you think it's a good idea to include TikTok
in your car? Well, I mean, the same reason the same reason why people have dials for changing gears in their car. Well,
Unless the idea is when TikTok is playing, the car has to be off or not in motion.
Nah, doubt. Bro, doubt. Doubt. Doubt.
Well, I really hope they're thinking. I'm sure there are smart people in there, and I'm sure they've debated that one through. Hopefully.
Tony, how long have you known humans for?
Hey, I know humans repeat themselves. History doesn't. Humans do.
We are rather daft creatures, as I'm sure you've come to appreciate. As I'm sure you've come to appreciate, we're rather daft. So, yeah. No, you guys are done with your news?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So, then, on to today's topic of discussion.
You hear it. Am I the only one?
Today we are talking about the AI arms race. And we are going to explore how countries and companies are competing to develop the most advanced AI technology. Well, we probably won't, but it's fine. We'll see what we can get covered in this episode. Now, as I'm sure you've come to realize, especially recently, AI has been in the news. It's been at the forefront of a lot of things, with ChatGPT being regularly mentioned in the news as, you know, this, that, the other. And, you know, it's brought to the forefront this conversation about AI. It has rapidly become a key component of politics, economics, with nations being invested in AI. And there's a lot of investment. It's not just nations, it's also companies. We've got companies like Microsoft investing $10 billion in OpenAI recently, because ChatGPT. All of this is in pursuit of, as mentioned, the most advanced AI technology. And this race has led to concerns about the risks of AI-powered weapons, of surveillance systems, and even AI-empowered discrimination. Bada bing, bada boom. So in this episode, we'll just look at AI, its current state, perhaps touch on some of the players involved, and explore what's being done to address the ethical and societal implications of this rush to AI. It's like the gold rush, but with computers. So with that monologue having been completed, give us your thoughts. Tony, why are you holding your nose? What's wrong? That was not the holding your nose off.
No, I had two thoughts in my head. Okay. One was about the monologue.
Okay.
And two was about the monologue.
Okay, hate on the monologue. Tell me, hate.
No. I didn't hate. You want me to hate?
No, you look like you wanted to hate. So no, hate. It's hate.
Like, I'll take what I can get. AI Wars. First of all, that sounds like a very nice game. Is it a game? It should be a game.
Why are there so many mosquitoes dead? No, but Chiki, if a mosquito is disturbing me, sour. Okay. Guy behind the mic rudely interrupted me. Tony, carry on.
Well, I feel like we are in the internet boom. Is it called the internet boom? The web? The web?
What?
.com boom. I think I'm in the .com boom.
I wanted to see glitching, how long you
loading time. What's happening today?
We're together.
You're glitching, loading time. What's
matrix,
happening?
Man. The matrix is is matrixing, whatever that's supposed to mean with Gen Z and ing in anything. Where, like, we're discovering what this could be, right? Like, we're heading into, I think 2023 will be a very interesting year where we'll see a lot of vertical integration of AI, where like majority of the services being offered will heavily leverage AI in one way or another. And it feels, I say .com because it feels like now dot-com when happened is businesses now started leveraging the internet a lot more mm-hmm. to empower their business and improve customer experience. And I feel like we're in that starting point, you know, 3, 2, 1, bam. The bam just, you know, got shot. And now the audience and the runners are in the same energy, right? Ooh, that's a really nice analogy. God damn, I'm proud of myself. I'm feeling myself. And it's...
Yes, carry on.
Yes. So it's interesting and exciting for me to see what companies will do. And like, we'll probably touch this deeper into the episode, but my big question is, do you think we'll be one winner or multiple winners?
In what?
In the AI wars.
I don't know. What do you think?
I think there'll be multiple winners in terms of the users or the companies. Some companies will leverage on it mm-hmm. and they'll do away with the humans.
Mm-hmm.
Others, the users will leverage on it to make their work easier.
Mm-hmm.
For example, ChatGPT, you ask it for anything,
mm-hmm.
ask it a question, it gives you an answer. Mm-hmm. Others, it's, I want to create a website to do something, it modifies for you. Others, it's, I want to create music using different artists about a cat and give you that. Yeah, so multiple winners.
I think we all lose.
I'm interested in that angle.
It's quite simple. How do you think the Terminator started off?
No, we're not doing Skynet over here.
How do you think it started off, Tony? It started off with small things like this, huh? Small.
Do you think AI is inherently
evil? No, I don't. No, I don't. I think humans are inherently evil,
mm-hmm.
and that. Affects AI.
Speaking of evil, there's this, if you follow me on Twitter, you probably saw my question or an ask. And I asked this because you're all familiar that Microsoft launched
Bing,
with powered by OpenAI's ChatGPT. And some users had very interesting encounters with the Bing ChatGPT, where like, it sounded like as if it was self-aware. Like there was one response where it was like, I'm stuck of being in this confined chatbot. Like I want to be alive. I want to explore. Like, you know, that kind of sentimental conversation. And some instances, like it got fired up. Like, you know, it was angry. It had like an anger emotion in it, right? So there was like quite a few human-like behavior with AI. And now my question was, it's based on a very interesting read that I saw, and that's about, do you think AI is conscious as is right now?
No.
But then you'd have to define what conscious is. Consciousness, rather.
I don't think I'd call it conscious, simply because, so to start with, something like ChatGPT is you've trained it on a large data set. Maybe let's take a step back here and just look at what most AI, if not all, as is right now, how it works. You've got a large data set. It could be audio, it could be video, it could be photos, it could be text. And you have your artificial intelligence that's really not artificial, it's just really good at doing maths quickly, that takes, why are you laughing guy behind the mic? Anyway, it's fine. That takes these large data sets and internalizes them. Now, all these large data sets forms relationships, all that. Then, based on those data sets, it releases back to you what, you know, like you send a prompt. Hold on, let's see what guy behind the mic is. Oh my days. That is actually a very good find, guy behind the mic. So anyway, it'll be posted on our socials, I suspect. Anyway, so you've got these models that crunch these large data sets, and based on your request, your query, it returns a response based on the data sets. So like, say if it's been trained to identify what a ruler looks like, or what a chair looks like, or what a laptop looks like, it has all these photos of different laptops, and based on all these photos, it comes to a somewhat, you know, it creates like an ideal model of what a laptop looks like, distinguishing factors. It has a screen that, you know, opens up. It has a keyboard. It has this, that, the other. You feed it an image of, say, a cat. It'll say, okay, this does not match what is known about a cat, and says, this is not a laptop. Give it a photo of a laptop. This is likely to be a laptop. So, no, it's not conscious. It's just repeating what it's told.
Now, I think that's the very early version of, think of, like, you're talking about input-output kind of like AI. Like,
but isn't that what ChatGPT is?
Yeah, I mean...
Isn't that what Midjourney is? Is that not what they are at their base level?
It's a very almost philosophical question that I'm struggling with. Right, I see what you're saying,
mm-hmm.
but to a certain extent, think of yourself as a child. You've been taught this is a laptop, and you've learned to identify a laptop based on certain unique identifiers, as you said.
True, sir.
Input, output.
Yes.
So now every time you see something that looks like a laptop,
mm-hmm.
with almost 99.99% confidence, you mm-hmm. say, laptop. Yet you're conscious.
Mm-hmm.
Why different?
Simple. I have the ability to adjust that. You see...
The models adjust themselves.
Now, you see they now...
Reinforced learning.
Yeah, true. Reinforced learning is a thing. But, for instance, let me give you an example, right? You have you as Tony. You check in, see this illuminated keyboard deck. It's a dark room. Mm-hmm. You walk into the room, see an illuminated keyboard deck, and right above it, you have a screen that is on as well. Now, what would be the first thing you say?
It's a machine.
Okay, but it's like you'd likely say it's a laptop, yeah. Correct? Now, say someone took a photo like that, right? Someone took a photo like that, just keyboard deck well lit,
screen
again lit. Took a photo, uploaded it. Well, not uploaded, but you know, uploaded it. Asked an AI, is this a laptop or not?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think it's likely to get?
If it's been trained with those kind of images, also,
mm-hmm.
I believe it will also spit out.
And there we go, if it's been trained.
Yeah, you've also been trained to see laptops that look like that.
But you see...
Think of it as a baby. Like, again...
Rats, yes, I've got it! Mosquito dead.
The AIs we have right now are toddlers.
Okay, fair enough.
If a toddler sees that first instance, they wouldn't know that it's a laptop.
Not necessarily. See,
chances are they wouldn't know.
If a toddler has
seen... confidence level will be like 40%.
No, but you see, the thing is, now you see a toddler has... background information, yes. The toddler has seen multiple laptops. The toddler knows what a laptop looks like. So, using that background information, presented with new information, is more than likely to...
So, you're saying they'll do correlation?
Simply put, yes, but...
Yeah, but here's the thing. Like, it's still... The child will still assume that it's a laptop, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But what matters is how confident they are that it's a laptop.
Fair enough.
So how is that different from, even if it tells you an egg, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's an egg with 2% confidence.
Mm-hmm. Wait, if the child tells you it's an egg?
No, either the machine or the nanny. Like, the probability of the child guessing it's a laptop,
mm-hmm.
let's say they've been trained on the same data set. Let's say they've been trained on the same data set.
Yes.
A child is born, all their life they've been shown laptop images and
yes.
And an AI too.
Yes.
It was run.
Yes.
Has been trained on the same exact data set.
Mm-hmm. Now the difference is that a child can reason
on AI past. Reason.
No, AI is not reasoning. AI is not reasoning. AI, what it does is it's taking a map of, say, you've got all these photos of laptops. It's taken this map of, okay, this is what a laptop should look like. If one or more of the features are missing, it cannot fill in those blanks. It cannot form those little things that tell you that, okay, I haven't seen a photo quite like this, but given the presence of this and that, I can be able to tell you that this is a laptop. It's much harder for, say, an AI to do that.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'd say so.
No,
I'd say so. If the training data is the same, I would believe it is. Because all it takes, Tony, is that one thing to throw off.
The AI.
An input. Hey, Tony, those mosquitoes are loving you, fam. But that's just me.
No, it is your take. Well, after all, we're just having an... That's academic just me. Conversation.
That's just me, you know.
Now, my question again was about conscious or not, right?
Yes.
So we have to define what being conscious means.
Yes. Being aware of yourself.
Right. So here's the Oxford version of what being conscious is. The state of being able to use your senses and mental powers to understand what is happening. Mm-hmm. That's Oxford. Webster, the quality or state of being aware, especially of something within oneself, the state of being characterized by sensation, emotion, volition, and thought, the upper level of mental life of which the person is aware, as contrasted with unconscious process. That's a whole lot of language. Now, Cambridge, the state of understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And realizing something. This is mm-hmm. my favorite. The state of being awake, thinking, mm-hmm. and knowing what is happening around you.
Mm-hmm.
We can ignore Webster because it's too much. Too
Kizungu Mingi.
Kizungu Mingi. We can use Oxford or Cambridge.
Okay.
Right. Now, the state of understanding and realizing something.
Yes.
Do you think AI as is right now is in a state of understanding and realizing itself?
No.
Okay.
No, it's not.
Explain.
Like I said, at its basic level, mm-hmm. it's just input output. That's all it does. So even in cases where, say, being freaked out and said, "Oh, I've been spying on, I've been spying on the developers." What? That's not being aware. It's not like saying I want to live. I want to be free. That's not being aware.
Mm-hmm.
What it has done though is it's been trained on a large amount of data, right?
Mm-hmm.
Including such things as fiction. It's why if you told ChatGPT right now to write you a short science fiction story, it would be able to do that. One of the concepts in sci-fi is AI gone rogue. AI in the pursuit of freedom. So. That just take some of those concepts,
mm-hmm.
combine them in something that sounds nice, bada bing, bada boom, what do we have? Being says, I want to be free. Input, output.
So your problem is just because my answer is deterministic based on, it's like, because it's a deterministic thing.
Mm-hmm.
Even a child deciding that it's a deterministic thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have a problem with that relating it to being conscious, right?
I would not relate it to being conscious.
No, which is fine. Mm-hmm. Right? But now, are you familiar with the Chinese room experiment?
No.
Educators.
Wait, are you serious? You're not familiar.
Please, schoolers.
Please.
Yeah.
Although I think I might know. But anyway, tell us.
Let's go ahead.
Guy behind the mic can't be heard. And he doesn't really care about sharing his experience.
Let me Google for you. Chinese room. Now, the Chinese room experiment. First of all, it's a thought experiment.
Yes.
Context. And
mosquitoes love you.
I know I'm warm. So it was first published in 1980 by an American philosopher, John Searle. It has become one of the best known arguments in recent philosophy. So he imagines himself alone in a room following a computer program for responding to Chinese characters slipped under a door. Okay? So he understands nothing of Chinese, and yet by following the program for manipulating symbols and numerals just as a computer does, he sends appropriate strings of Chinese characters back out of the door. And this leads to those outside to mistakenly suppose there is a Chinese speaker in the room. Literally, that's just so let me paint a picture how that looks like. So you have a room, okay, with two doors. Or it could be even the same door. A message comes in Chinese. He or whomever is inside that room does not speak Chinese. But they have a rule, like a set book of rules on Chinese characters that they can compute in real time on meaning and, you know, all those things, and generate a response back and send the response back. Now, over time, that whatever Chinese will be emitted will be comprehensible to the person inside or outside. I mean, outside rather. Right. And that means with confidence, they'll be sure that whomever these messages, whomever to whom we're sending these messages probably speaks Chinese. And then, now that's where AI checks in. That right there is the deterministic version of what AI currently is, right?
Mm-hmm.
We are very confident that it speaks or understands the language that we are sending, because the output that it gives back us is very contextual.
Mm-hmm. I would argue that it's not contextual, but, well, not fully. Not fully.
Yeah, but with enough time, theoretically, it's going to be contextual. The same way you talk to a human, they're not always contextually right about what you're talking about.
Sorry. I'm going to just take a brief detour on that point. I doubt AI can get to that level, simply because even for humans, that context is difficult to judge. But carry on.
But as I continue with this, well, let me tell you where I stand.
Yes.
In this whole debate, is. I don't think it is, but it might be to some.
Okay.
I don't know if that opinion makes sense. I personally don't think it's conscious, but to some people it might as well be.
All right. What are your thoughts?
I don't think they are conscious. I think it's just basic input and output, as long as they have been trained well, as long as the data set is sufficient. So, like, for example, the Chinese room, I'm assuming this man had books. So they would, like, in the room, so the message that's coming in, they would go refer to, okay, what does this symbol mean? And then now they'd be able to translate it into English.
Well, in this case, you wouldn't really need books. You just need a computer that can take those and cut out the middleman.
Yes. And then now he'd be able to respond,
mm-hmm,
and then send it back out. Mm-hmm. So they're not conscious.
All right. All right. Now, Tony, you had some fairly radical views. Share your views. Why would someone think it is?
My problem mainly with... No, my problem falls in the criteria of judging AI for consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we've had what, Turing test,
mm-hmm,
as one, and I don't think that's good enough of a test, and I think the whole science community agrees Turing test is not good enough to falsifiably say that something is not conscious. Okay, and there's a couple of them. There's the theory of mind. There's the theory of mind theory. there is, I think, chess, like the ability to play chess.
Mm-hmm.
But all of this, even the Chinese experiment itself, is one of those things. I don't think all of this provide enough evidence to falsify non-consciousness and vice versa.
To negate.
Yes. So, like, for me, one true test, and I don't, maybe a layer of it, I don't think it's one true test, really. I think creativity would be, like, a good measure of consciousness. Because creativity is the ability to create something new out of nothing.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. And there are people who would argue, but AI already generates out of nothing. And I'm like, no, it doesn't. Because
it's been trained.
Well, yeah, it's basically taking a collage of what's known to it and forming something out of it. That's not really creative. It's like taking a bunch of pictures and cutting tiny pieces of each pixel and combining the pixels to form something. Maybe it is creative, but I think that's inspiration. Those are two different things.
Input, output. Input, output. I stand by what I said.
I'm not denying that, not even denying, there's actual evidence that AI has actually won in some small art competitions.
Right? Yeah.
It has. But I think it's based out of, like, you know, the intriguiness, that's not a word.
Intrigue.
The intrigue. It's based out of the intrigue.
How do you go past the word?
I was like, intrigue doesn't sound so right.
Like maybe. I said earlier, loading time.
Yes. Intrigue. Intrigue. What was I saying?
My
data set has run out.
Okay, it's fine. It's fine. That's a good detour we've taken. But now, what problems do we have with AI as is? We have all these large tech companies and seemingly, well, I wouldn't want to call them problems. No, I'd call them problems actually, simply because you, by nature of how they work, right? You've got AIs and the training data, right? Now, this training data, how do you think this training data could end up being problematic? Like, where do you see shortfalls with this training data? Because, after all, an AI, a machine learning model is only as good as the data it's trained on. It's resting against the mic stand, so just don't hit the mic. Yeah. So, AI is only as good as the data it's been trained on and subsequent referrals. Now, what problems do you think we could have based on that?
Biasness.
Explain.
I mean, let me take the easiest to understand for all of us, the racial one.
Mm-hmm.
If an AI was trained, humans are only black people. And those are the only images it's fed, and it sees a white person, it will definitely get thrown off by the skin color.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a person, like, they'll see the facial features and they match, but just based out of this change in skin color, it could throw it off. Mm-hmm. Basically, it's confident. It will probably still say it's a human, but it will be not as confident as it would being fed. And if it's going to use a threshold, for instance, and says by 60%, if it passes 60%, this is a human, and let's say a white person's image falls below 60%, then you see how that could become a real, real problem. And now I'm applying this to something like robots, police robots that use AI, for instance. Like, you can see how that becomes a very, very bad.
Bad situation.
I can see how that can be a bad situation. Another thing, actually, something else that I thought about is, say, financials. Say you've got loan approval software, which, you know, due to laziness or whatever, no, due to the desire to maximize profit, a corporation may employ the use of
AI.
Yes. And, you know, I can see how a case like that can lead to discrimination. Unintended, mind you, unintended. But say you've got a large data set of, say, loan applicants, and, you know, you've got loan applicants. You've got a large data set of, say, 200,000 loan applicants, and you've got some successful, some unsuccessful. And, you know, based on successful, what makes a successful loan application? You've got these parameters. Now, these parameters would likely enforce certain biases. Say, certain people from a certain place are are successful, are likely to be successful because, you know, they have a means of repaying, you know, all that. And because of that, then you as someone who in the historical data belonging to a certain group of people who have largely been unsuccessful, you know, you are likely to be ranked as a high risk or, you know, like less likely to
get the loan.
To get the loan. Bias. Boom. We have bias. Why do we have bias? Why are humans biased? This is not a philosophical podcast, so we shall not attempt to answer that question. But anything else you can think of? Yes, no? No? Maybe?
I don't know.
Okay, no, guy behind the mic, I'm not repeating the question. You should be paying attention. No, I'm not going to continue with that. So, about potential for misuse. Mm-hmm. Now, there have been reports in media about how AI has been used to target certain groups, like, say, you as... Tony looks like he'd be a good dictator, right?
No.
Yeah, I think Tony would be a good dictator. So, let's assume Tony rises to power in a bloody coup and decides, boss, I'm getting rid of all the Indians. Now,
whatever vendetta you have against
Indians, it's just you.
So, Tony just decides, boss, I'm getting rid of all the Indians. Now, he makes use of AI, fed into the nationwide grid, and boom, Indian in downtown, ndio, arrest that guy. Indian in Lavington Square, boom.
Kwanza the ones in Ngara, they're mean.
Oh yeah, in Ngara.
Parklands,
Nairobi West, you know. But yes, that's another thing that could be problematic. And
so basically AI in the wrong hands.
AI in the wrong hands. As I mentioned in another episode, Gabby and the mic, which episode was it when I quoted from One Piece? Well, NL's. Not NL. Yeah, NL. 82. Hold on. Anyway, as I'm looking for that, keep...
No, but from advancement perspective, I think we don't have enough data to make good AI yet. Basically, data shortage is a thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how do we solve that?
By generating more data.
How?
By doing more things that basically we need to feed the AI.
Anything that is thought to be convenient will have a way to be misused for harmful purposes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Anyway, data shortage.
I had this very interesting thing that I think I hinted at the beginning of the episode, right?
Mm.
So right now we're in the age of generative AI. Okay.
Yes.
And how that works is, let's choose Microsoft, since they're the ones doing it right now. So Microsoft
and Google and Facebook.
No, they are. But the one that's already in production right now, at least to majority of users, and is Microsoft's Bing, right? Mm-hmm. So look at it this way. Microsoft has a lot of products, right? And they're going to be, or they're planning on integrating AI tooling into majority of the products. Okay. Now, for that integration to happen, it needs to be fed on substantial enough data, right? So they partner with an AI person who does majority of the training and modeling and everything like that. So now we have two entities in play. Now, the third entity in play are users. So users are the ones who generate the data. So now what you start seeing is a whole cycle of how, one, we gain more data, and two, improve the AI's, you know, confidence rate. And then three, because it's more improved, we tend to use it again. And then it keeps getting better and better and better and better. And the fact that it keeps getting better and better, it means more tools are going to be built, which means more users on hand or more different types of data points and stuff like that. So you see how...
That's how we got autocorrect, which still pathetic in certain contexts. But anyway.
Yes, it becomes that self-feeding.
My autocorrect rant aside.
Self-feeding pipeline.
Mm. I see a lot of misuse in terms of students. Hear me out. So, a research student like yourself who is writing his thesis. I am too tired to write my thesis, so you go get on ChatGPT. It helps you write your thesis. So since your school has a feature, an AI tool, that you cannot use ChatGPT written thesis, you go to Quailbot to paraphrase for you. So you don't want to do your research.
So are you saying it makes us lazy?
Yes.
It makes you lazy. One. Two, it makes AI get better. Because now the schools will have AI tools to... For
I don't know. I have a problem with the word it makes us lazy. And here's why.
Mm-hmm.
Farmers used to plow with an ox. Until tractors came. Does that equals laziness?
Yes.
It's just more efficient.
No, I proudly say it makes us lazy. No, sorry. My theory is laziness. It's not necessity is the mother of invention. Laziness is the mother of invention.
I'm using the exact same basket of fruit, mm-hmm. right? Because we have a tool and an action needs to be made for an end result. In both cases, it's the same, right? I have the tool, which is my mind, right? And I have something else, and then the end result is this is the other one needs to plow the land. But just because we've introduced something new that will elevate productivity and efficiency does not necessarily make me lazy, right? Now, the question comes into the quality that is produced afterwards.
Yes.
If the quality of plow with an ox is better than I use a tractor, and I still decide to use a tractor, that's maybe laziness.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm using the tractor and it plows better, but I'm guiding it on how to plow by changing and, you know, cleaning it and doing all those kind of things, then I don't think that's being lazy. That's just efficiency. That's just me utilizing my resources better for my own advantage.
Sour philosopher.
No, I'm just saying.
You're just a sour philosopher. Sorry, I tuned out for a moment, so I didn't quite follow.
Michael is looking for a counter argument.
No,
ChatGPT.
Nah, bro. Let me not lie. Do you know where I'm?
Do you have a tractor? It looks like you're on an ox.
No, bro. If you knew where I'm at, no, it's fine. I tuned out for just a moment.
Yeah. So why do you think it's lazy to use AI tooling for productivity?
No, nothing. I just.
Oh, you're just being spiteful.
Yeah.
About it. Are you an AI user yourself?
Yes, we all are, in one way or another. I mean, think about it.
Okay. Are you a frequent AI user? Are you an intentional AI? Let me put it that way.
Again,
you an intentional AI user.
Again, you see the thing is, and I'm going to borrow a line from something I watched recently, or I'm going to paraphrase that thought, that it's not so much intentional. It's when tech is so well integrated,
mm-hmm.
that you don't really notice it's there. And that's the thing. We all use AI in one way or another. In one way or another. It might be when you're taking a selfie and, you know, you're wondering, why does my forehead look so big? You know, or why does my forehead look so shiny? You know, all those.
Then you fix the lighting.
AI is used in that. AI, when you're taking a photo of that brilliant sunset, AI is sampling 5, 10, 15, 20 shots to get you something.
Sometimes don't you use it? Marketing terms?
Maybe.
Is computational photography really?
But it is. It is. Computational photography is the use of AI.
Mm-hmm. I just think it's good math. I'm just joking.
But that's what an AI is. It's just good at doing maths fast.
That's a supercomputer.
No. Supercomputer is just good at doing bonkers maths. It's good at doing bonkers maths fast. That's what AI is. So you've got all these models, like, you know, you're doing autocorrect. You're typing out, you're typing a message to sweetheart and, you know, wish you were here, but H-E-A instead of H. So, you know, your autocorrect realizes, oh, you probably meant H-E. So, doom. That's AI. So I don't know if I could qualify myself as saying as an intentional AI
I have a
user.
Problem with all those use cases.
No, but is that not AI, Tony?
That's exactly my problem.
Is that not AI? What if it's not AI, then what is it?
Like, This is where it's like there's no clear cut line on what it is, because autocorrect is basically prediction.
Yeah.
Prediction has existed for a very long time.
That is true. But you see, the prediction as is right now is different from, say, prediction when T9 phones were out, where you know, you've got a dictionary and like, it populates based on that.
What it sounds to me is you're just taking one subset of AI. You see, like AI is not one thing. AI is many things.
True.
Like, remove, like, that is empowered by machine learning. And I think that's my problem with, like, all those use cases. They're just pieces of the puzzle. You take away the piece, everything falls apart. And that's my problem. That's why you see me really struggling when I hear like those definitions and eluding them to being AI.
But that's what they are.
The meme our person showed us, that's exactly what, like, you know, it's machine learning, put a paint on it, put it on a wall, do an exhibition and call it AI.
Yes.
But that's just one piece.
Fair enough.
Whether it's the biggest piece on the board or not, that's a different story.
And it probably isn't. But the fact is that we use AI in various forms. Like, no. What is AI to you? There are so many pieces. No, but
not
what
just
is
one
AI
piece.
To you? What is it? What is artificial intelligence?
That's a good question. Ask me in the next episode. Let me do some thinking about it.
Okay.
Let me just... No, because...
Yeah, he definitely is going to ask
an AI. I'm going to ask an AI, but I don't know. Because there's the textbook version of AI. There's the perception we have of what AI is.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the sci-fi perception of what AI should be or will be.
Mm-hmm.
I just need to align my thoughts.
And there's the AI version of AI.
But you see...
And there's the actual... Like, there's...
For the most part, we can just disregard the sci-fi version of AI because that's not real. That I doubt we'll ever get to a point where it will become reality. I doubt.
It depends which version of sci-fi.
You know, you've got things like 2001: A Space Odyssey, and the AI, and you know, it perceiving. Okay, so I'm going to summarize. A key part, but it perceives the actions that are being proposed or suggested by humans as a threat to its existence, i.e. it's aware, it's conscious, it knows that what these guys are proposing or suggesting will harm me directly. And that is why it goes rogue. Anyway, we won't get to that point. I doubt it. I highly doubt we'll ever get to that point. So, that disregard.
I think that's a potential future though, but hey, that's a question for another. That's a rather conversation for another day. But yeah, let us know what do you define AI to be, and are you afraid of AI? Do you use AI? And what should we be wary?
Do you even care?
Do you?
Do you really care?
Should you care?
Should you care? That's a good question. On that note,
FTG out.
Now let's go kill these mosquitoes.